Oh, hello. Welcome to episode number 207 of the Apple Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Head. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by BetterHelp.com. Get affordable private online counseling anytime, anywhere. Talk with a licensed professional therapist online. You can start your 7-day trial with the code word Apolog when you go to betterhelp.com/Apolog. And that is betterhelp.com/Apolog. Go check that out. It's very useful, very helpful. I'd like to thank everybody for shopping on Amazon. Thank you so much. It's coming up on the Christmas holidays season. You can help the show out too by going to apolog.ca/Amazon or apolog.ca/USAmazon, and you'll get redirected to Amazon. And when you shop, you can support the show. You can do it the old-fashioned way by going to apolog.ca and click on those banners located on the right side. Look at your country. Bookmark those links. And every time you shop on Amazon, you will use those links to support the show. It costs you no extra money. I'd like to thank everybody for helping me out on Patreon. You too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/Apolog. Pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees, and you can cancel at any time. Go to apolog.ca/shop to buy a t-shirt and some music there too. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. Give it 5 stars, please. Like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/apologpod. Follow me on Twitter at simonhead666. Jeff is the principal songwriter and the guitar player in a band called Modern Terror. Jeff is also in a band with a guy named Limo, who's a guy I've known for 25 years. And turns out he plays drums in his band. I didn't know that until I actually looked him up and went, oh my God, Limo plays in his band. Jeff from Modern Terror on the Apolog Podcast. Well, it's nice to meet you, Jeff. And Melanie got in touch with me about doing something with your band. And then I look on the site and go, you know Limo. And we were just talking about before we turned the mics on. But Limo and I go back 22 years, maybe even more, you know, if we didn't. Yeah, because for Gorilla Gorilla days, he's based out of Winnipeg, right? So.
Oh, man. I should have had him here so you guys could have talked to him.
Are you guys in the same neighborhood?
We're pretty close. He actually used to live like a block away, and Jamie lived a block away, but he's moved about 2 or 3 clicks away now. So he's moved a creek over. He's in Wilson Creek, and I'm in Roberts Creek. So
what sort of town are you living in? Town, or is it like whereabouts is that in relative to Vancouver?
Vancouver. So basically, you'd go to Horseshoe Bay in West Vancouver, catch a ferry, and come across to us. And we're part of the Lower Mainland, but. We're this little peninsula that's, you know, hanging out away from Vancouver, kind of how we like it.
Yeah, nice and quiet.
Do you remember the Beachcombers?
Yeah.
Well, that's Gibson's. That's where the ferry basically lands, and that's Gibson's there. So that's sort of where we are. We're a couple minutes down the highway in Roberts Creek.
It's everybody. Yeah, I mean, because that's sort of a thing now where as you get older, it's kind of nice to find a little bit of quiet, a little bit of something, you know.
Somewhere you can come and make noise and not get the cops at your door.
Yeah, that's true. Did you grow up? You grew up in that area?
I grew up in Vancouver, and my parents have lived here for about 25 years. So since I was like 13 or so, they were coming here. Yeah. And basically, I kind of was back and forth, but then still in Vancouver, and then I went off and they've lived here ever since. So I've been back here about 12 years now, I guess. So
Yeah. You always played music?
Always played music since I was about 10. I mean, if I wasn't playing guitar, I was listening to music and just, you know, it was my first, rock and roll was my first love all the way.
Yeah. What bands? What sort of music? Were you always into punk rock or was there other bands involved?
Usually, my father played music as well. And so he had a huge record collection, anything really guitar related, you know, tons of Ventures and surf and all that kind of rockabilly, lots of country, lots of, Southern rock and classic rock. And yeah, so I kind of had a nice steady diet of that growing up, anything that had guitar in it, lots of blues.
Yeah.
And then I kind of found like my first record that I found or first album that I found was Iron Maiden at that age. And
which one?
That was like, whoa, I think it was Power Slave. We used to go to the library, my dad and I, and thumb through the records, and he pulled out Iron Butterfly and was like, oh, this is a good record. And I'm like, right behind it was Iron Maiden, and I was like, what's this, you know? And yeah. So that was kind of poof, away we went from there. So.
Yeah, I think I was Number of the Beast, so I was...
Yeah, I
really like, it's funny how people have the Deano versus Dickinson, and it's like, I like them both, but I like Dickinson.
The first two records are fantastic. You can't deny that. It's just that raw, it's totally good. So yeah, like it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I met Bruce Dickinson when I was on tour with Voivod, and we opened up for Bruce Dickinson on the Tattooed Millionaire tour. And, he was an awesome dude. Like, he was just a normal, hey man, how you doing? Great. Good.
Puts his tights on one leg at a time, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. And he said something, because we're playing in Cleveland, and he did the Scream for Me Cleveland. And he played with, instead of the Agora Ballroom, which has this big, massive stage where, like, people like Queen have played in Cleveland, we played on the, like, in the bar in the front. We were supposed to play the big venue, but both bands couldn't draw. So they put us in like the bar part of it. So Bruce like comes on stage, obviously hadn't been there, just got on stage and started playing. He goes to one side and goes, whoa, oh shit, I'm already there. And went to the other side, whoa, shit, I'm already, the stage was like way too small for him. Like he was this.
Where's my riser?
I was supposed to get the lift to get me up in the air. And, but no, he was super humble, very cool. But I remember being on his rider, he needed a stretch limo. Didn't have a stretch limo, there's going to be problems. Yeah.
Geez, you think he could, in those tights he could fit in anywhere, you know? It's not like he's got to worry about ripping his pants or something.
He didn't have tights at the time. It was funny. He wasn't wearing tights. He's just wearing normal old pants, just like the rest of us. Yeah, yeah. No, but, I mean, Iron Maiden seems to be like a pushing off point for a lot of bands. It was either Ramones or Iron Maiden or, I mean, Black Flag or something. You know what I mean? It was something that sort of reached a pinnacle in sort of like where it became popular and then everybody's like, that's it, I want that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That was me, it was sort of that Maiden and then the punk rock sort of followed behind. Dead Kennedys was right in there as well. That was a huge page turner in my world. So stuff like that coming out of the 80s. They were broken up before I even discovered them, kind of thing though, right? You know? So like, oh well.
So how old are you?
42 today is my birthday, actually.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday. Very cool. Amazing. Yeah, how's it feel to be, I don't know, half dead?
Half dead works for me. I'm alive and kicking. That's all I know. Feels good. You know, I wish, sometimes you kind of wish there's a, I don't really want to like rewind time, but a pause button would be nice right about now, you know, just to kind of ride out this sort of plateau I'm on for a couple good years, you know.
Yeah.
Just keep there, right? So totally. Which I just may, you know.
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, your record's great. I listened to it today, and I like the fact that it's sort of spread around, you know. It's not just hardcore, some melodic rock and roll, and it's sort of all over the place, and that's cool. I mean, a lot of songs on there, I guess, because the songs are all like 2 minutes and less, right?
That's right. Yeah, punk rock songs, you can crank them out, right?
Yeah.
And if it, there's no good punk rock record over 30 minutes, I think, you know. So I think we came in at 30:08 or something.
Oh, really?
So.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And that's all. Yeah. Because it was like when I was trying to find the link to play a song, and I'm like, this is longer than 30 seconds. It's got to be longer. Yeah. Maybe I could get away with iTunes. Like, if you have 30-second long songs, you could just listen to it for free.
No, thanks. You know, we're really proud of the record, and we like that it does kind of, with Jamie and I singing and writing, there sort of ends up that 1-2 punch, yet we both tend to write, you know, it's either a Ramonesy song or it's a, you know, something kind of heavy and Black Flaggy, and you know, or you know, we're grasping at everything else we're listening to, and it all just seeps in, you know. Oh, I listened to too much Teenage Bottle Rocket this week, and I wrote a Teenage Bottle Rocket song, you know, stuff like that, right? Which is just the Ramones anyways, so.
Totally. I mean, the fact that it sounds great, and you had Garth to record it, like, Garth Richardson, he's a pinnacle of everything, right? Like,
he's a monster. You walk in and you see, you know, platinum records and stuff from Rage Against the Machine all over the wall, and you kind of go, all right, let's see what this guy's got to tell us what to do. And, you know, he really, there was a moment actually when we recorded Let America Burn, and I was tracking guitars, and he just kind of turned around and stared at me and just watched me play and just like pulled it right out of me. And I was just like, that was my sort of my Rage Against the Machine song. It's got that sort of big anthem chant at the end. And he just turned around and just, pulled it right from me. So yeah, he's a really cool dude to work with. So
yeah, you know. And he's a musician. He's a fan of music. I mean, like, he loves music, and he'll do anything that excites him. And I mean, you could paraphrase that, he's not eating for the money. I mean, like, he's that type of dude, right? Like, does it for love?
He definitely isn't.
And, yeah. and he'll get the ones that pay him cash, a lot of money, and that's great. But in this today's environment, having his name on it helps both sides, in my opinion.
Yeah, we had so much fun. His studio's absolutely just this stunning place, nestled under the little mountain of Mount Elphinstone. And it's all, you can just go secluded in there and hang out. And it's called The Farm. And you're like checking out, I'm going to the farm, you know?
Really? Oh, so yeah, it's like an on-location kind of thing.
Yeah, on location. Yeah, it's a really cool spot. So,
did you find it to be like, because punk rock's usually born and bred in the streets of wherever, but I mean, is it tough to like go out and look at this beautiful serenity and go, I don't know how angry of the world I am right now, because life's pretty fucking awesome right now.
Well, while I was finishing the album from the hot tub,
Oh yeah, I'm ready for my take.
Exactly, yeah. No, it wasn't. I mean, we could have gone to East Vancouver and parked our van and maybe got our shit ripped off and recorded a little bit better record, but I'll take my chances in safe old Roberts Creek recording here.
Yeah, totally. Like, I used to have a studio where I live about an hour outside of Toronto, and my studio is about 20 minutes, 15 minutes north of here, which is sort of the docks, the boondocks. And I had a band come up and they're like, where's the Starbucks? And only this year have we got a Starbucks like close to our place, which is a pinnacle of downtown, I guess.
Yeah.
But I found it really hard to not fall asleep in the middle of a recording, because it was like, it's so quiet and everybody's just sort of like, hey, this is kind of cool. I'm like, I got good at trying to like keep the party going, not with like, the party, but trying to keep the mood going, because you could really get lost and enjoy the situation and
serenity now.
Totally. Yeah. No, but the record sounds great, and there's it's very consistent. When I heard it, I was thinking like, this is hardcore that just sounds really good. I mean, like, know what I mean? That was it, just was recorded well. And then when I found, I'm like, two things came to mind, because I'm listening to my car and I go, oh, this is cool. And then I look on Facebook, I'm like, Limo's in this band and Garth Richardson recorded this record. This record's going to be my favorite. You know what I mean? It's got two of my favorite things, because Garth is definitely a big influence to me, like for recording bands and stuff,
I bet. Yeah. Well, he's so cool to work with. He's such a cool cucumber. And like I said, his resume is just, I mean, his dad's legacy, everything about it, right? The name. And I mean, it's cool. And just to be able to hook up. And I think we're even better friends than we are, people that worked on a record now, kind of thing.
Yeah. So did you know him personally because of like just being around, or just?
I actually hadn't. I'd heard, heard the rumors that he lived around and all this stuff. And Brett Limo had met him a couple times here and there. And I just was like, you know what? Well, let's reach out. So I reached out, sent him an email. He said, hey, why don't you come on by? And we had a quick hangout. And within 2 minutes, we were both like, yeah, okay, this is going to be fun. Let's get her done. So. Mm-hmm. It worked out really good. Yeah, that's very good. Cool.
That's how West Coast of you.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of the way it works around here.
Super groovy. Yeah.
Puff pass and make a record. Yeah.
I always thought it was funny. Like Vancouver in the '90s was like, there'd be like a punk rock band, but for some reason there'd be a cellist in the band or something. For some reason, it's like, let's throw something weird in there. Remember that band, Another White Male. Yeah, but they had a stand-up bass. No, they had a double bass. Double bass, and they were like a metal kind of punk rock band.
They were just 10 years or 20 years too early, because isn't that the thing now? It's just all about the having a stand-up bass and a banjo and something else in there.
Yeah, that's true. It is someone stamping
and neck tattoos. Just covered. Right?
That's true. What happened? What happened to our world?
I don't know.
Remember, tattoos are badass. I do.
Exactly.
Everybody's wearing them. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, you're kind of my age. We're kind of the same age, and I kind of grew up not really in the hard streets, but at the same time, I toured a bunch and enjoyed touring and living on no money. And it seems like a dying breed now. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like there's like a level of comfort that people don't want to. Yeah,
it's cross. They don't want to put their phone down and actually engage at a show or something sometimes too. Like, and. I don't know, it's crazy. I agree. There's sort of a real safeness to it all now, even if you're playing the sketchiest venue in town, it's still kind of vanilla, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like I remember playing like in Tacoma, and it was a place that skinheads hung out, not just the good ones, but the bad ones too. And like they were like, it was like playing, they were down by law. And it's like, mm-hmm. why, what's going on? Why are there people like kind of lined up on both sides of the thing? It's like, well, there could be a fight at any moment. I mean, shark skins and straight skins all hung out. And it was like, it's just scary. I mean, put myself in a situation. It scares the shit out of my parents when they hear these old stories. Like, you know.
Oh, I know. We just went and saw, we were down in Tacoma not too long ago. Man, that's, it's a raw town, that town. It's kind of the armpit of the West Coast. Like it's,
oh yeah,
it's got some, we went and saw Bad Religion and NoFX down there.
Oh yeah.
It was at this weird venue, and it was a goofy setup. We weren't allowed any booze backstage, and it was just like, what? Like I'm walking backstage. Okay, let's go. Yeah. I'm with Limo, you know? And then it's like, no alcohol backstage. We're like, what? And so, yeah, it was a weird one. So I had to pound IPAs at the side stage and then go backstage. And then, yeah.
my very first tour I ever did, we were opening for Down by Law, and we drove from Toronto in a minivan that we rented. And we drove all the way across America, ended up in Tacoma. And we've somehow hooked up with this band. They're called the Stacys. And they're like, come out to our show. I don't know how this is all hazy to me now, because it was like almost 30 years ago. But there was this fight. It was in this weird spot. Like, it might have been a skate park, but it was this weird thing. And there's this one guy being an asshole. And so all these dudes that kind of looked the same took this guy and wrapped him around a pole and beat the fuck out of him, like right in front of us. And we're like, is he gonna die? Like, what's happening here? And then the band's still playing. Like, nobody seems to be worried. And I'm like suburb kid looking at this going, oh my God, there's gonna be a murder. Like,
what's happening? Yeah, being the suburb kids, that's kind of was us as well. You know, we were definitely the skate kids, you know, cruising around. And there was the six of us at the school. And then I kind of grew up too in Coquitlam and Burnaby area when like, kind of like NWA and that huge rap movement was going, and white guys really wanted to be gangsters. And there was just, we saw that all springing up. And we were just skating for our lives some nights, you know, from gig to gig and getting chased by everybody. It was, you know, my own version of the Warriors, even though I was some, you know, chubby white kid in the suburbs, right? It was still pretty scary shit. And that's where that raw energy of punk rock and it all kind of comes into play, right?
Yeah. I mean, now couldn't be a better time for punk rock. I mean, based on what's happening with, I mean, it's a horrible thing that's happening in society, what's happening right now with politics and everything, but it's making for some really good punk rock and stand-up comedy. I mean, there's,
you know it,
two things that are really, really taking off because
prime time. I mean, nobody wrote a punk song about Obama, did they?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
You know, he had such
If they did, it was probably still happy and good, right? You know?
Obama is the best. Well, then again, Obama, he did some pretty mean things. It all kind of came out in the wash.
He was a puppet, you know, just like the rest. But yeah, he wasn't quite the puppet master of the orange goblin down below.
Oh, the orange-faced monster.
Exactly.
I don't know, man, because when he was first becoming, look, a candidate, like he's going to actually probably win this. My big thought in the back of my brain was, if you're a developer in Manhattan, you got to have a few skeletons. You must have killed a few people with your bare hands. And there has to be some sort of like accountability. So when you fucked up, how many people do you have to pay off? Like even John Kennedy couldn't pay off enough people, you know what I mean? To keep his wash clean. So how many skeletons does that man have? Does Trump have in his, and how much money is he spending to keep them all in there?
He's got to have a big closet. That's for sure. Totally. He's got to be finding Christmas presents back there that he stashed a while ago. You know,
it's true. I mean, I don't know. How do you, cause you're a West Coast, I'm East Coast. I try to just ignore it. It's such, when I hear stuff, it's like, I don't even want to hear it. And is that,
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah. Do you want to engage? How do you engage with that? Like, you can't really.
My wife will wake up in the morning and we'll have coffee or whatever, and I'll be sitting playing my, you know, acoustic guitar, and then she'll be like, "Oh my God, you know what happened today?" And I'm like, "I don't care." And then I'm just like, I started writing a new one just called "Your World Is Bumming Me Out," because my Facebook feed's all like so-and-so's on tour and there's a new record and, and blah, 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 you know, but it still filters in there, you know, but I try to just kind of,
I write
a punk song, punk rock song about it too.
Yeah. Right?
That's my coping mechanism, I guess. You know?
I try to keep Facebook feed clear of the word I and me. And because that's enough, there's enough out there. There's like a lot, all those humble brags, like, you know, I just bought this house and I didn't realize how awesome I am. Like, that's a paraphrase, but like, you know what I mean? It's like, or I just did this and I'm blah, blah, me, me, this and that. And I thought, the world is full of narcissists. We don't need any more to post it on Facebook. Facebook should be a spot where they show, like, hey, look at this cat. Ah, oh, isn't it cute? Look at that cat do something. Oh, I just ran away.
Cats are cats, and that's about it. I cats think really and kids. We should just cats. Yeah, exactly.
Let's start a Facebook feed called Cats and Kids. That's cats all I want to see kids, is cats and kids, not kids. Wait, that sounds weird.
That sounds weird. Yeah,
my kids.
I gotcha.
Like, no. Yeah, I don't know. Digging himself a hole. But yeah, I mean, the thing about, like, we were just talking about this the other day about Facebook and how exciting it is, because I meet people who I went to high school with, and I went to high school a long time ago. And then now I'm meeting up with people today who I went to high school with, and they do these cool things. And I don't think if Facebook was around, I don't think I'd have that.
I agree. There's such the juxtaposition of it. There's so many ways to meet new people like you and people through music and the sort of industry side of things. And then your old friends or people that you meet, and they are really cool. And you get to kind of see what's going on and tour the world with them too. That's fantastic. But then there's all the other, then there's just all the over, you remember those emails you used to get? It was like, you know, okay, stop sending me this email. I have seen it already. It's the same with memes nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you know, we've seen all that. So, you know, I'll take the good with the bad.
That's true. Well, you have to, yeah, you're right. You need, you know, I mean, to put up with a little bit of bullshit. I mean, I don't think I can leave Facebook now. Like, Facebook has been such an exciting way to, like you say, meet people, understand what people are doing. And I don't really mind when people talk about how tired they are because you have to fly to another country and
do
stuff. I mean, there's that, the humble brag. I forgot who invented the humble brag, but he wrote a whole book, and it's all from Facebook and Twitter updates. It's called Humble Brags, and I forgot who the author is, but all he did was take other people's things. Like, I got defriended because I called it a humble brag when my friend, this guy, I'm not keeping nameless, but he's like, I'm so tired because I got to wake up and at 4 a.m. so I can go play Kimmel. And I'm like, that's a fucking humble brag, man. Like, that's congratulations. And then, bam, unfriended him. Oh, well, there you go. I probably weren't that close anyways.
Maybe he was cranky because he had to get up so early
to go play Kimmel.
Whatever. I mean, I definitely don't need to see what everybody cooked themselves for dinner. You know what I mean? There's maybe some more intelligent shit we could put up there.
Yeah. And the other thing that could be, this is a Facebook, whatever they call it, a public service announcement. My Office for Today posts can go fuck themselves. Really. I am done with the Office for the Day. I don't need to know what your office is for today, because clearly it's not the Office for the Day. It's where what you're doing.
Clearly it's not. Yeah. It's, otherwise it would be, for me, it'd be the underside of a bus, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm tempted to do, because I have an office and I'm like, here's my office for today. I'm in here every day, you know.
Yeah, just take a picture of the recycling bin overflowing or something, you know?
Yeah, and then you can say humble brag. Then
exactly. Hashtag humble brag. There you go.
Let's hear a song. Do you have a song? It's way over here. Hold on. If you can see, my arm is just.
Yeah, you need a Go-Go Gadget arm.
What? I got your whole record here.
Yeah.
I like the Chemtrail song. Can I hear that?
Let's dig it. Hit it.
Trail. I wish we could keep. I'm going to try. One day I'll make a segment where it's just the in-between talking, because obviously that goes away. But
yeah.
The most funny shit is said in between the songs while the songs
the
play.
Takes.
Yeah.
Totally. You can do a whole coffee table book of that, or just screenshots.
That's
or
true.
Maybe sprinkling pictures of your dinner and stuff in there.
Yeah. So you find yourself, here's a legitimate question. Do you find yourself as pissed off with the world as you were when you were 20?
I think I'm probably more pissed off because I'm actually smart enough to understand how long I've been getting fucked by the government, you know, and realize that even though I didn't trust it back then, it's, you know, it's still happening now. The problem being is I'm also in the machine. I'm working, I'm paying taxes, you know, I'm doing pretty good. You know, we work really hard for the lifestyle we have. And, you know, I got a bunch of guitars behind me. So life ain't that bad. I've really never had anything to be that pissed off in life about, but it still comes out and I get to put right a punk rock song about it. And when I see the injustice of the world, I can kind of, you know, that's how I harness it and deal with it, I guess. So,
yeah. You know, cause if you took it and internalized it, it's not healthy. We're of an age now where you can't hold shit in because stress kills, man.
That's right. Makes, you know, next thing you know, you got cancer somewhere you don't want. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say, you know, I think I'm more educated now. I try and, you know, learn a lot more and read into things. And with the internet, obviously there's so much wormholes you can go down for songwriting and, you know, the ability to look up anything and sort of start making songs up. It's pretty cool that way, but scary at the same time.
Oh yeah. No, there's a lot of information being put to you from different agendas. I mean, that's the difference between when we were a kid, when I was a kid, it was the news. That was the guy with the bad suit reading the news, unbiased
that's
news.
Right.
And now it's like if you have a right-wing agenda, then you listen to this news. If you have a left-wing agenda, you know, you listen. Now you pick what side you want to be on, which I don't think is kind of cool for what society should be. We should be getting together.
No, it's way too polarized. We need to learn that capitalism doesn't work and hasn't worked, but it still has to exist, but we need it in definitely a little bit more of a socialist, you know, avenue versus the me first and give me all the money. Right.
Yeah. And with Canada, we're kind of there. I mean, we kind of have it, we kind of get it, but
we do. Yeah.
And Ontario has really kind of, now we've got another Ford in power and they're getting rid of minimum wage hikes. And buck a beer, though, we got buck a beer. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
Right.
You know.
Right. Smokes are cheap and Keno's cheap and the projects too, right? You know, and
yeah.
You can get bullets and all the, yeah, anyways. It's for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. But like as it goes, I mean, we live in a pretty awesome country when it comes to like you're not gonna get strung up by your fingernails for speaking against the government. If you kiss a girl in public, that person might not get killed, you know. We got it pretty good. I mean,
and we legalized marijuana.
That's right.
That's you know, I'm still getting over the fact that I can, you know, something I've snuck around and done for many years is now kind of not so sneaky.
There's a guy I was working with where I work, and he came in and goes, I smoke weed every day for like 20 years, and now it's free. Man, I don't really feel like it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, British Columbia, we've kind of been there for a while.
There was this time, my mom should probably switch the podcast off now, where this guy owed me money. So rather than give me money, he gave me like a bunch of weed. So I'm like, okay, great, no problem. So I'm driving back to Ontario, and me and this friend of mine, we're driving back, and there's another guy driving. I'm like, oh, shit, I got this weed. Let's try this weed. And it was the most gnarliest, harsh, potent weed in my life, where my arms went numb. They're just like, I was in the back of this van and my arms are like bleh, and we're laughing because we're so high, and we both fell asleep, and we were like, we're at Lake Louise driving towards Calgary, and we both woke up after we'd driven through Calgary, like that's how it knocked us on our ass.
Wow.
So cut to, I don't know, 6 or 8 months later, I'm in at my house, in my apartment, and the Weakerthans were staying over at our apartment.
Oh, yeah.
So I said,
oh, I got this weed. It's called arm numbing weed. You're gonna love it. So there's like 8 of us, and we all pass one joint around, and then all of our arms, like, it just happened again. And I remember they were all like, "Oh my god, it does numb your arms. This is it makes you paralyzed."
that's kind of scary. Sounds like it's laced with ketamine or something.
Whatever it was, this guy who gave me the weed, I used to when I lived out there. Do you know a guy named Cuba? He used to play bass in DOA. I lived with him for a little while, and this guy was his roommate, sold pounds and pounds of weed out of his apartment, out of his rehearsal space. He used to give me like hundreds of dollars and say, go buy stuff and come, don't spend it all, but bring some of, I would launder his money for him. So nice. He'd give me like all this cash and go like, okay, you know, go buy 3 packs of smokes with this, you know, like, so you'd like buy all this stuff and then come back with fresh money. And that was his way of laundering money, is buying stuff with cash, and I would do it, so it wouldn't look like he was doing it. I guess it doesn't matter anymore. System. His market's
that's
gone.
Right.
That market
that's
is gone.
Right.
Yeah.
It's long gone.
Well, I mean, Colorado is like, for once, is like, they're out of the deficit. They're making tons and tons of cash.
Yeah, I don't see it being a bad thing, other than, you know, now the government just, you know, don't steal, the government hates competition, right? So yeah. We'll see how this all irons out.
yeah, that's true, because, I mean, you could, yeah, you, I mean, I don't even know how it works, because I haven't smoked weed in probably 25 years, so, or 20 years, maybe. So I don't know really how that works anymore. I mean, like, I don't have a guy, you know what I mean? When someone's like, I got a guy, there's a guy.
You know? Well, then you don't need a guy, that's the thing, right?
That's right.
You don't need that guy anymore.
What's that guy doing? Like, that guy's just walking around going, I got nothing. I got nothing to do.
I used to be the guy.
I got all this weed, and that's it. I used to have a guy when I lived down city, where, because I worked for bands, I owned a recording studio. The guy would come by, and he would sell weed, and it usually was in like pickle jars, so you wouldn't smell like weed. And I thought, that's a pretty great, you know. And one night we're driving through into town. I was driving through with a band, and I see him riding his bike. I'm like, hey, these guys are looking for weed. And the guy weed goes, man, trying is super dry right now. I'm like, he knows. He's the
he's the guy.
He's the guy. He knows everything about the weed.
That's right. Yeah.
So this record came out in May, right? Like
yeah, it did. Yeah.
Did you? It's so you did some shows and you played some tours, and this must be like sort of the end of what, I mean, would be considered.
This is the cycle sort of coming to a close in a sense. It was great. We released it in May, and then we went on the road with Pennywise and Strung Out, and we came and did a slew of dates through Quebec and Ontario. It was amazing, and we had a blast, and can't wait to come back and play all those places again. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool.
Did Fletcher mess with you?
Fletcher was a perfect gentleman, believe it or not.
Wow.
He had some fun. We had some definite fun with those guys.
Yeah.
He got Jamie good at the end of the run. He got Jamie pretty good. So that was he made me smell his shoe, and he Febreze Jamie and dubbed him Fabrizio, because Jamie didn't bring any deodorant with him or something.
God.
I can't remember. So,
That's hilarious.
So that was really the only messing. Brett had us, or Limo had us, quite scared. He said, "He said a Pennywise tour is going to leave some scars." So
yeah, definitely could. There's stories of him like Fletcher beating up his text with a coat hanger. That's a story I heard. I met him because he's 8 feet tall and I'm not, and I met him at Montebello Rock Fest, and it was like 3 a.m. and I was tour managing the Descendants for like 2 shows. So I see Fletcher. I knew he sticks out like a sore thumb. The man is goddamn gorilla.
Like Emmett.
Yeah. So he's got a watermelon, and it's cut in half, and he's using his fist to mash the watermelon with his fist while talking to me, like, what do you do? Who are you?
I go,
I'm Simon. I'm tour manager, sound guy for Descendants. He goes, mad respect. And he pours vodka into this and sticks like a straw in it. That's his drink. He's drinking out of a watermelon. Yeah,
he's one of a kind.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, we definitely had some good nights for sure. Had some lot of fun hanging with him.
I don't know how he can still keep going, man. Like, he must, I don't know.
He eats a lot. I think he's like, you know, they went out and he had like 2 big steaks, and, you know, and then he just washes them down with a bunch of Coronas and Somehow he's still rocking, man. Think about it, right? His liver's this big and ours is this big.
That's true. Know? He can handle way more.
Exactly.
I think he needs to have guitars made for him, though. Because you know how the guy, that band Excess, they had that More Than Words song. Is that band Excess?
Right, yeah.
He had his guitars.
Extreme.
Yeah, extreme.
He had his
guitars made smaller for him because he's a little guy. I think Fletcher should have guitars like made bigger. So it looks like proportionally okay. Because when he plays, his fingers and his hand, I don't know how he can make the fretboard work because he's just so big.
He plays like he's got two Mesa stacks, and he's got them on top of milk crates, and he's still like as tall as them. Like he still makes it just look like a normal, stacks, half stack.
Yeah. And those guys came, like, talk about punk rock. I mean, like, that was, they're gangsters. I mean, there's some badass shit going on down there.
Badass shit going on down there in Hermosa Beach, for sure. So,
Yeah.
They were a band. They were a real light bulb band for me, too. I remember hearing them on a snowboard video and was just like, whoa, what the hell is that? That's great. And fast forwarding to the credits of the video to see who the band was. And there was like three songs off of, I think it was off of Unknown Road on that movie, and I was just like, wow, Pennywise. And that's back in the day when you had to like search for music. You couldn't just dial up YouTube and, well, here's seven of their albums. Yeah. You know, it's just like, I had a, whoa, who is that? Who do I know that would have that?
Yeah.
So I was pretty, that was a pretty big bucket lister to go out on the road with those boys for sure.
Yeah, right. So did you get that?
They're kings. They're total kings.
Did you have like the little starstruck moment? You're like,
where was it? Sherbrooke, maybe. We were playing this cool old theater in Sherbrooke, I believe it was. And me and Fletcher and Jake were sitting up in my dressing room just having a beer after. I think we'd played. And no, it was after the whole show, right? We were just hanging out talking. And I was like, we're talking about, you know, teenage guitars and demo bands with your old bands. And I'm just sitting there and I kind of had to float above myself and go, I'm just sitting here talking shop with Fletcher and Jake. You know, this is one of those moments. And a limo came up and he's like, hey, we're getting ready to load out. And then he looked and he saw and he's like, I got it.
Let me,
you know what I mean? Right. So that was kind of magic for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right? Limo's a good dude that way. I mean,
oh man, he's a champ.
I've never toured with Limo. I don't know. No. Never toured with him, but
everybody wishes they could have him to tour with. He is a freaking jackknife. He is such a professional. He is, yeah, man. And to be a bandmate with him is even cooler too. But to see him work is pretty awesome as well.
Oh my God, yeah. Because I knew him when I worked for SNFU, and I like. Does he still have the half, whatever, 500,000, the half NOFX record?
Yes, he does. Yeah,
it was 500,000 sold. It was like 500,000.
It was half a million in Canada or Australia.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah.
Snapped it out. Yeah. When we the first jam we ever had, like 5-6 years ago, I went and had a whiz in this can there, and I look and I see that, and then I see this Pennywise one on the wall, and I'm like,
Yeah.
Well, this could be great, you know? So
yeah. Yeah. You know, and he moved out that way because did he move your way, or was he always there? And
no, he moved here. I guess he'd been here for a few years maybe before we met, or a couple years before we met. So yeah, and just came out here and raised his kids. And
yeah,
it's a good spot to come and raise your kids, get out of the city. And that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And so when you met him, you kind of had that sort of, oh, okay. Like, did you know each other from not living there, or did you?
No, we didn't at all. I knew of him, and I remember hearing something about this dude, Limo or Brett. He's from NOFX or something. I was like, oh, that's really cool. I'd love to meet him, have a beer, and hear a story. And then Jamie and I have known each other since we were about 12 or 13 and have been playing music for a while. And then we were in another band together, and it just kind of hit its end. And Limo sent me a message on Facebook, and he's like, hey, you want to check out my jams? And we're like, yeah, sure, right? And we were sort of, Jamie and I were looking, you know, start all new music. We weren't going to do the old band. It was like, let's start something new. And then we just went down and hung out with him, and it was like, yeah, okay, this is kind of perfect, you know? Because it'd be like, yeah, you know, in that song, you know, the Black Flag song with that beat's kind of like that, and Brett would be like, yeah, like, do, and you're like, that's it. That's exactly it, right?
Yeah,
there was the language was already there between us all, right? So,
yeah. I like those moments, you know, because I don't play, I play an A band or two, but to have that moment of like
sitting in a room and hanging with your friends and playing music, that sort of makes it up for everything now for me. Like, I feel better and more validated as a musician because I can associate with other people in the same room. You know,
exactly.
Not a lot
yeah.
of people can do that. I mean, a lot of people, no. I've met people who play music their whole life, but they just sit in their basements and they have shit in their basement and they just sort of jam away and enjoy yep. it. But to have that sort of connection, it feels great. I mean,
for sure. Yeah.
Especially now I'm older because I can kind of play a little better and I don't need to like learn how to play an instrument.
That's right. Yeah. You can hear you've progressed. You've heard a million more songs. You've listened to your favorite songs a million more times. You realize why they're good songs and you start to kind of craft that, you know,
yeah.
and that's exciting too. I feel like every day I play guitar, I'm getting better, getting faster, you know, mm-hmm. and I'll never master, it's one
trying.
Of those things.
Yeah. I've met a lot of people that sort of had a band when they were 20 and the band would either be really, really popular and fall apart or not be popular at all and fall apart. And then mm-hmm. when they got older, it's like, oh, I already know how to play. I mean, the rehearsals were like, you get back on the page way faster because A, you know how to play. That's a very important part.
Sure.
And B, you're a different person than you were when you're 20. Like you can function more in society. Well, hopefully there's, you know, I still know some 40-year-olds are pretty introverted, but you kind of have a grasp on what you can do and who you are and therefore what you can give to other people. I just hit my mic.
That's right.
But,
and the work ethic is already there too a lot, like where you're not thinking, oh, it's going to happen for us. It's like, I never expected at 42, you know, to be sitting here having an interview with you or feeling my career kind of in an uptick, you know, like we've been really lucky with Limo and the people he knows. But we also want to be that band that doesn't just come up and suck. We want to rock and make people go, oh fuck, they deserve to be there, you know, they should be out on the road with Pennywise and working with Garth Richards, and so you know that, and so that makes that, you know, all worth it, like you said, right?
I mean, there was years 20 years ago where that wouldn't fly. If 42 year old dudes were trying to make records in the early 2000s, good luck, you know. We're in a different spot now. I think musicians have evolved, and I think people have evolved to say, well, we are getting older. Everybody's getting older. I mean, we have baby boomers that are like more baby boomers of above the age of 70 than we do, you know, of our age. So saying that, people can accept more when people are trying to do something. And I think there's more of a legitimacy of being in punk rock your whole life and then sort of like dipping the toe in and go, oh, this is, I still like this. Even though I have a job, I do things that are normal, you know, quote unquote. But there's still a lot of ethic there with punk rock. And that's sort of what I really, really appreciate when I meet people who were punk rockers who integrated themselves into real life.
Yeah. Well, you kind of had to learn to play the game, or, you know, when I was 20 or 19 or whatever, it was like I had friends that literally moved to LA and he was going to play guitar and he ate craft dinner for the next 6 years. And, you know, he ended up doing it. He played in a band. He went on Ozfest tours, all that stuff. But it took him that long window of suffering in between. And I just was like, my dad grew up really poor and he was like, you don't want to grow up poor, man. He's like, you need to get a trade or do something or whatever. And he's like, you know, you can shred that guitar, but you got to do something else to keep buying new guitars. And so I did. And, you know, now we can afford to, you know, make a great punk rock record with Garth Richardson rather than, you know, keep recording it with the Tascam, you know, tape deck or something.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Which is great too, you know.
No, it's true.
Always be recording, right?
Well, I mean, the fact that we were talking about this sort of encompasses everything you were talking about, is that you're on a mountain hanging out with Garth Richardson. Being a dirty punk rocker from East Van is not going to allow you to do that at all. You need to pay for these things. And that's the part of being a musician that sort of like the people sometimes don't get. And it's tragic when you see people who've sort of like, that's how they are now. They're still broke. Yeah. They're drunks or out, you know, they've got something wrong with them. They're sociopaths who think that music's going to save their life. And that's... How many people have you met where rock and roll actually saved their life? You know what I mean? There's not a lot of people out there where it's like, I found punk rock and my life is forever changed. You know, it's like not Jesus Christ or something, you know, like
it'd be a good skit for Portlandia or something like that. You know?
It's always a downhill. It's always like, well, I got punk rock and then I had to buy this thing and then I got a speeding ticket, and I couldn't pay that, and then it just escalated downhill, and here I am in jail.
And now I'm on heroin, and I'm dead. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always that. It's a very slow road, but by the time you go, now I'm 48, and I got to live in an apartment, the same apartment. I keep having roommates that are progressively getting younger because I'm progressively getting older.
Getting older, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's okay because I'm the one that deals with all the money and stuff because I'm the older one now, but who wants that? Like, who?
Not me, man.
Yeah. I mean, I get suffering for your craft. I understand that part. And I actually, part of me appreciates the fact that people do that. I'm not doing it. I don't know. There's not a lot of people that I know. I've talked to a lot of people who's like, yeah, man, when I turn 40, I'm not sleeping on floors no more. Like, I'm not putting up with that shit.
No, I'll spring for a Super 8.
Yeah. I have a credit card.
That's right.
Paid off.
Yeah.
That's so funny because last time I slept on a floor, I was like late 30s and was in Europe. And I was like, I don't care if I'm on the other side of the world. This sucks. This really sucks. I can appreciate that I played. We opened up for some band in Europe somewhere, but this still sucks and I don't like it.
Yeah. European floors still suck.
They're hard, just like Canadian ones. That's true.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So when you toured it over here, did you sort of come straight here or did you tour across? And
We landed in Toronto. We flew out and then Jamie and I actually had a great trip. We jumped on a train and went up to London. And then we played in London, and then we came back. We played Toronto. We did Ottawa, and then Quebec City, Montreal, Sherbrooke, and Brossard. So from Toronto on, we were on the bus with the Pennywise, which was super fun.
Yeah.
And then in Quebec, our label picked us up. Paget, who is you probably know Paget, right?
Yeah.
So picked us up, and we stayed with him at his house, and just like family, and we had our own suite. And so we were based out of Montreal, and we were able to just tour around Montreal for about 3-4 days. It was awesome.
I haven't talked to Paget in years.
Right,
I'm saying he's a fucking great dude, man. Like,
he is a real good dude.
I keep forgetting that he was like, oh yeah, he's not that far away from me. He's been always really, really supportive. Like, I used to have a recording studio that I'd put in my van, and he hooked me up with bands in Montreal, and I set up in his place a few times, and I think I recorded a band Rise there and some other bands, and he was just put me up every time. He's such a great. He was
sounds about right.
Is he still living that same place though? Because like he had this place, and I think it was 2112. I forget what street it was, but I laughed because it was a Rush record. But 2112 somewhere. I can't remember. But he had this place, and all the bands stayed there. And the Bad Brains broke up in that apartment, like the first time. Yeah, because he put on the Beastie Boys and Bad Brains at like the big place, wherever it was, and. HR got in a fight and he beat the shit out of their tour manager in the bus as they're going across the border and got thrown in jail. And then the rest of the band stayed at Paget's place and basically broke up. So the first
it's probably the same spot, man. It's a pretty, pretty sweet little apartment. And like, I can't imagine, you know, he's moved around because it's a pretty awesome little spot. So
everybody stay there. Well, tell him I say hi because I haven't seen him. Hi, Pat. He's probably listening right now.
Yeah, he might be out on the listen.
Tell him to come on the show.
Yeah.
Anybody got stories? Pat, you got stories?
I bet he does. Yeah.
Let's hear another song. Hold on.
Okay.
Here's the one. Oh wait, I wanted this one. Where's the Ronald? There it is.
Oh yeah.
Welcome to McTrump's. Can I take your order, please?
Clip or a burger? Tender was a deal. How was I to know how I was getting in my meal? Grab a plastic tray. Found a place to sit. Pepsi's Coca-Cola and my burger's full of shit. At Ronald McDonald Trump's. Ronald McDonald Trump's. Spoke to the manager, but all he said is "Hey, had to climb the wall to get into work today. Since as we're tied, nobody is free. Eat your shit and drink your Coca. Policy at Ronald McDonald Trump's.
Your longest song is 3 minutes and 12 seconds. I was just seeing the
longest. I know. Yeah, that's the longest, yeah.
It's epic.
We try and keep yeah, it's, like, it's the epic
God and Evita.
Yeah, we try and keep them, you know.
Yeah.
Down there.
Well, I mean, that's the point, is like, you know, it's funny that I play in a band kind of called the Fairmounts, and our longest song we've done is like almost 4 minutes, and I'm like, it feels great because it's our decline, you know what I mean? Like, it's our
minute opus.
Yeah, it's our opus. And I thought, and the guy who wrote it is like, do you think it's Mikey wrote it? He's like, is it too long? I'm, no, it needs to be longer. Like, let's make more parts. Yeah. Like,
let's make a bridge to the bridge, you know?
We should make it one, the whole set is going to be one song.
Just a Foo Fighters song, you know.
That's true.
Epicness.
So you're gonna do another record? Or what's your plans going into the
definitely
future?
Plans for 2019 are we got a few, definitely looking at three sort of separate little tours, hoping to do some spring stuff coming through Alberta and back through British Columbia, and then hopefully in the summer heading out to Montreal and Toronto again, and just kind of putting the wheels on a couple of those, and then hoping in the fall to maybe do sort of a Pacific Northwest down as far as San Francisco or something like that, if we can pull all that off and get our border shit all together, you know.
Other than that,
writing new music. We got a bunch of new songs and then some other songs that were sort of carried over from the last, so we're sort of gluing together another record, so I definitely think we'll be back in the studio in 2019. So.
That's amazing. Yeah. I'm glad that, you know, that it, age doesn't really say anything in this case. It's like, sometimes you need to kind of go through some shit in life to sort of like know where music sits in your life. Do you know what I mean? Did you have that moment where like, I love music, but I think there's a time in my life where I kind of got to get my shit together?
Yes, definitely. It was early, but I, you know, my dad honed it into me at an early age. So I became a commercial transport mechanic and basically was like, okay, I got my shit together and now I can buy a new Les Paul. So, you know, I definitely pissed it away for my 20s and, you know, and had a lot of fun chasing girls and riding snowboards. But then I was like, okay, well, now I can buy some guitars when I want. And so, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, go ahead.
I kind of think I got my shit together now, but you know, the jury might still be out on that one. I'm still 40 something playing 14 in my head, you know? So,
well, that's,
as long as I can keep doing that, that's good.
Yeah. That's the most important part of punk rock and life in general, is that it's ageless. And it's kind of what I was saying before. It's like, it doesn't matter what age you are. It's how you perceive yourself. And what makes me so proud is that punkers are integrated into real life, and we are, we're still there, and the ethics hold true. And you might have to rub your hands together and talk with some douchebag about something, but part of you wants to fucking take him in the back and give him a few boots in the side of the head. But that's what makes it exciting. Like, for me, I work in a theater. I have to work with crazy artistic types and people that have no concept of how to put on a show, and I'm like, listen, man, I toured the Warped Tour by myself. Like, I know. we should be able to get this changeover done in like 2 minutes. I don't know why it's taking 15, you know. So, but part of that is what I take to real life, that I can understand and give perspective to say, not everybody toured Warped Tour, you know what I mean?
No, we all didn't have that.
Like, we didn't go dumpster diving in Vegas because the food was good, you know. Like, these are things that people have to do on tour, you know. Well, not everybody.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm sure maybe you feel the same way, as like, even if I'm in a room, you know, with work related something, or I was just at a conference for mechanics and stuff like that. I work for BC Transit, and I'm in this room, and I'm just like, I'm still like the punk rock kid in this room, you know. Everyone's wearing Snap-on hats, and I'm wearing my NoFX hoodie, you know, or whatever. And it's just like, I'm still, that's just who I am. And I always will, hopefully will always feel forever young because of the counterculture of being a skate punk. And I hope that's, you know, maybe a secret to my longevity.
Yeah. Or even if it's cut short, you still like, you live in life
that's
for
right,
you.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
I'm with it, you, yeah. Man. I'm totally with you, because the body eventually does, you know, whenever it fails you, and then that's the end of it. But it's how you carried yourself from you know, because when you're 20 and you don't care, like, it's amazing that people are still alive in 20. Like, for all the stuff that happens and all the shitty people out there,
it's amazing that we're still alive. I mean, we're still here. You know, you think about
there's
it.
There's a lot of casualties along the way, right?
Like how many people in your life? Gone.
Oh, way too many. Too many. Yeah. But it's also interesting, too, is like when you look at the bands that are still up there doing it in their 50s, you know, there are peers. And so you're almost playing for that age demographic. You know, we're not seeing a ton of, you know, 19-year-olds at our shows per se, but hopefully that changes. The funny thing is, we like some of the songs, we call it dad rock, you know, because they're singing about kind of stuff that's going on in Limo and Jamie's life with their kids that are now 16-year-old skate punks, and you're like, oh, here we go again, right? You know?
Yeah.
And so some of that's filtered in, and so we're sort of singing songs about that stuff too, which makes for good content as well, you know?
Totally. And people who are over the age of 45 that goes to punk rock shows, they probably went out for dinner. You know what I mean? They got a babysitter maybe. They're living like normal people, but they're going to go see a punk rock show. And to me, I'd rather play in front of people that sort of make the effort than back in the day when playing in front of people who were just winos sitting there
just going to get drunk and get in a fight.
Impress me, stupid Canadian or something. You know what I mean? Like now there seems to be like, well, no, we made the effort. We're going to have a good time.
That's right.
Makes sense. Yeah, so. Well, I'm going to listen. Well, let's hear one more song because usually I do two, but your songs are so short. Hold on.
All right.
I like this one.
I'm your dad cause I fucked your mom. I'm your dad cause I fucked your mom. You exist because I come. I'm your dad cause I fucked your mom. I'm your dad cause I fucked your mom. I'm your dad cause I fucked your mom. Don't be mad, there's nothing wrong. I'm your dad cause I fucked your mom.
Thanks so much for doing the show, man. I really had a good time. Oh, and next time you do a record, you guys come back on anytime. I really enjoyed, you know, having you
on. Sounds good. We'll definitely we'll get you in Limo maybe to sit down too, and you guys can swap some stories and stuff like that because he would probably love that.
So. I tried to get him on the show about a year ago, and I sort of asked twice, and if they don't say, you know, okay, let's do it.
He's a busy guy.
Yeah, I asked twice. Well, actually, I asked more people more than once, more than twice, but I don't want to feel like, you know, I'm going to hound. Yeah. But Limo's got probably amazing stories. That show, that No Effects Backstage Passport show, is like that's one of the best shows. If anybody gets a chance to see that, one of the best reality shows about what it's like to be a punk rock band, even though they're playing big, massive shows. It was just, that says everything. It encompassed everything to me.
Yeah, my favorite story he ever told me, he said he was doing the Vandals Christmas formal, and he was doing sound. I think he said he was doing front of house or something, and all of a sudden these all the 25 off-duty Santa Clauses that had been shingling around out in the streets came in through the back door, and they all stage-dived off the stage, and this, like, army of Santa Clauses.
Amazing.
I mean, that's the kind of shit you don't hear at, you know, a Miley Cyrus concert.
Yeah,
right?
How did that happen? How'd they get in? Well, hey, man. Right sounds like your dog is going to eat somebody.
Yeah, he's probably hungry.
It's
Jamie. There's Jamie.
Hi, welcome.
He's walking in. He's probably coming to drink birthday whiskey for me. So.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, by the way.
Going on, Simon.
Hey, Jamie. How you doing? Nice to meet you.
Simon says hi.
Hey, Simon.
Hey, welcome. Right on. Okay, awesome. Great time. Cool, I'm going to hit stop now.
Take care.
And that was Jeff Dorn from Modern Terror. I don't know why I didn't use his last second name in the intro, but I didn't. Now I am. Jeff Dorn. Jeff Dorn, 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 Dorn. So thanks for listening to the show, everybody. Thanks for checking it out week after week after week. It's been a great couple of weeks having a couple of great guests on, and now the more guests, and I got more guests coming, and it's just guests everywhere. I have an actual backlog for once. Finally. It's taken all year, but I got one. Thanks for shopping on Amazon. You too can support the show by going to appalock.ca/Amazon or appalock.ca/USAmazon. Support the show. Thanks to all my my patrons. Thanks for... You too can support the show by going to patreon.com/appalock. And that's all the bits. I got no more. I got no more bits. Hey, so check it out. Doing a new Fairmounts record, and I'm recording that as we speak, and it should be out within the next 6 months. So that's exciting stuff in my life. I don't usually talk about my life that much because it's about the show, it's about the people. But this is different because I'm doing this great record and I'm very, very proud of it. It's glad it's turning out. It only took 6 years for us to do a new record, and it's about time. I think 6 years is enough. So, anyways, see you next week. Have a good one, and ta-ta for now.